There were 2,538 special objects, but 2,000 have been lost. The remaining 538 are to never be joined together. There are a certain set of rules that must be followed exactly to obtain these objects. Let's look into a few as we do a little Seekers, Holders, and Creepypasta.
They're coming to get you.
By the power of Christ.
This is
me.
Hello, Mr. Fancy Pants.
Math's hard, Matt. Math is hard. How many objects?
It's 2,538, but 2,000 have been lost. I don't know how that happens, but it goes with the story, so.
Okay. Well. That's fun, I guess.
We'll see. We'll see. Yeah, we'll see what happens with it. They're fun reads, and I don't know. I like the destination. You got to go out and look for it. You got to go find it. And sometimes the best thing that can ever happen is it won't work for you with the way these stories go. So it's like, if you get kicked out, that's the best thing that could ever happen. Because if you are invited in, your chances of getting to this object are crazy.
One in a million. More math.
God, I'll stop with Matt. I can't.
Anyway, hey everybody, welcome to Hello, Mr. Fancy Pants. I'm Zach.
I'm Spar,
and today we're going to talk about holders, and we're going to do a little creepypasta. We're going to take a little break. I'm still trying to wash Rock Terrio out of my fucking head. So I asked Matt, please, and he said, fine. So we want to thank everybody that's listened to the first episode, which just came out. I think this is technically episode 4. But if you have any questions, comments, or concerns, you can email us at hmfppod@gmail.com. And don't forget to like, rate, and review wherever you get your podcasts. 1 stars are fine, just like the entity. I'm okay with it.
Put yourself in that position.
So Matt, do you know of any creepy stories? Have had any experiences with the paranormal?
Yeah, even we've had a couple when we was out on ghost hunts. But one of my favorite ones that I heard was from a dude that I used to work with at a factory, and this guy's he's not a bullshitter. He's not one of those dudes, and he didn't want to tell this story. Even I had to like kind of force it out of him. But he lived in a house in a town that I live next, kind of near, fairly close. The house is still standing, but they didn't live there very long. But they were renovating the upstairs, and while they were renovating, the kids wanted to go up there because they thought it was like camping. So they took like their sleeping bags up there to go camping or whatever. So he was sleeping downstairs on the couch, just, you know, so he could hear him better or whatever. He said he wakes up in the middle of the night and he sees an old woman walk down the stairs from upstairs, walk through the room that he was in, which was the front room, and then walk into the bathroom. So he was like, holy, this woman just, she doesn't know where she's at. I got to go, you know, I got to go help her. I don't know how she got into the house, but I got to go help her. So he gets up and he goes to the bathroom. No one's in there.
Whoa. But
he told me, he goes,
this ghost had to take a piss is what you're telling me.
Must have. he said there was no seeing through it. It didn't look like any kind of entity or anything. It looked like an actual elderly woman was walking through the house because he was concerned. He wasn't scared. He was concerned.
Right. That's crazy, man.
He said it was a couple days later or something like that, that his wife was taking a bath and the kids had left and he went in there to talk to her and he said something about it. He goes, I don't want to talk about it. I've seen her too.
Oh,
and that was
when they decided it was time to get out of Dodge.
It was very shortly after that they left. Like the kids never seen it, or they never said they did, but
well, that's like, good.
It always comes down to if somebody like, if you're telling somebody a story, like something that happened to you and they're like, yeah, I know. I've seen it too. It's just like, oh, that makes it,
That makes it that much worse.
Yeah, yeah. I could have pushed that off as I was kind of dreaming, maybe, but not now. Thanks.
Oh, great. I'm going to have that stuck in there for a while, right? Yeah.
Well, my wife has even done that thing where she woke up one morning and she told me, she goes, well, last night, she goes, I thought I heard a little girl say mommy. And I was like, yeah, I've heard that too. But it was a long time ago, and I'm pretty sure I was dreaming. So you probably were too.
Oh, shit.
One of those things where you ask, did you hear that? Yeah, me neither. Let's move along.
Well, if you don't care, Matt, I'm going to go ahead and kick this off with a little creepypasta. Is that cool?
Get after it.
All right. I found this one on creepypasta.org, and it is supposedly, it just said posted by anonymous, and it was sometime before July 2008. And this is the story of the smiling girl.
Okay, I'm already. Okay, yeah, let's go.
You ready? The smiling girl. I don't know what to do anymore. I'm so scared and I can't trust anyone. I went camping about 3 weekends ago in the Huntsville National Forest in Texas. Me and three friends that came home for the weekend, they're all in college and usually I'll get together at least once a year. Old friends from high school. For the camping trip, we plan to go backpacking deep in the forest, live off the fish that we catch and animals that we can trap. We've been doing this for a while in Texas and in numerous other places like Arizona, Colorado, New Mexico, etc. So we're pretty much used to anything you'd encounter out there. It was my turn to pick where we went camping, so I chose Huntsville. More accurately, it's Huntsville, New Waverly. So we went up there, park our car in the camping spot, and start walking off into the forest. We had some laughs along the way, everyone catching up with each other's lives, and we walked until it started to get dark, and we set up camp where we stopped. Everyone gathered wood to make a fire, and we set our tent up. And we do what we always do, try to scare each other with weird stories. Around this time, we started to smell something very faint. It was noticeable, but not overbearing. We couldn't put our finger on what it was, so we just carried on. Mike had to go piss, and he walked off in the forest. A second later, he came running back, piss all down his jeans like he'd missed real bad. Immediately, we all crack up and throw some jokes at him. Then we notice that he was white as snow and trying to catch his breath. He starts screaming for us to follow him, and he runs off. We all get serious and go follow him, not knowing what the problem was. We start to hear a faint scream and crying in the distance, in the direction we were running. It was pitch black away from camp, and Mike had the only flashlight. We left ours at camp, and he had his from his trip taking a piss. So at this stage, we didn't have much choice but to follow the light, which was frantically pointing here and there in front of him. The scream gets closer, and Mike starts to slow down. We then notice a ratty old cabin that looked like it was abandoned except for a faint light we could see from one of the old mildew-covered windows. The crying was intense. Whoever it was couldn't breathe enough to let out a full yell. We all followed Mike up to the front door, and all we could hear was a small crying sound from inside. As soon as he knocked, it stopped. We all waited and heard really heavy footsteps walking fast to the door. There was a giant slam against the door and the sound of a bolt unlocking. Then, nothing. We waited for a bit, knocked a few more times, but still nothing happened. We walked around the house. There was no fucking way any of us were going to leave each other's side. And we noticed a window, which was a good way up. Alec took a deep breath and asked us to give him a boost so he could see inside. Me and Mike lifted him up to the window. We watched him brush away the dirt and webs from the window and place his face close to the window to try and see something. There was a quick beat. Then suddenly, he breathed in fast and let out a scream. Then he fell back from the window, screaming bloody murder the whole way. We all tried to calm him down, but he was hysterical. We went to him, but he started to shake, punch, kick, cuss, you name it. And then he took off towards the camp. None of us wanted to be separated, so we all ran close behind him. We caught up to him and grabbed him and set him down. The fire was dying out, so I grabbed some nearby wood that we'd collected and added it to the fire. My hands were shaking and I had to do something. I went back to Alex and we all tried to calm him down. He just kept screaming and was breathing so hard that he eventually fainted. All of us are terrified now, and we all kept by the fire until the sun rose. Periodically, Alex kept waking up, screaming just like before. And by sunrise, he was up and he looked catatonic, just mumbling to himself and whimpering. Me and Mike decided to go look at the cabin now that it was daylight. We searched where we thought it was, except there was nothing there. Nothing at all. The indistinct smell from last night had now grown into a very strong smell of something dead, something stale. We headed back to the camping site. When we got there, we found Alex had chewed into the side of his face and had swallowed so much blood that he was throwing up. John was at his back, and he looked like he was about to die from exhaustion. I guess we all looked that way. I just didn't notice until I saw his face. Alex said quietly that we needed to leave. Now. We all started to pack up the tent. It started to rain heavily. It was about noon, and the sky started to grow dark, really dark. Alex started to go into a panic. He went and grabbed a large stick and yelled at us to leave it. Just leave it. Leave it now, or he's going to knock us out and drag us out of there himself. Mike started to yell at him, and they started to fight. We broke it up and finished packing, and then we started to make our way back. After a little while, we arrived at a creek, the one we had crossed the previous day, only it was flooded over, and the water was moving so fast we couldn't cross it. Alex started to scream again, yelling at Mike for taking his time packing up the tent when we could have just gotten out of there. This went on for a while until we finally convinced Alex to calm down and tell us what happened. Damn cursor stuck, Matt.
We'll have that.
Sorry. We'll pick this up here in a second. He said as soon as he put his face to the glass, a face on the other side did the same thing and started to smile really big. It had dark eyes and a dark mouth, which was much bigger than Alex's. As the smile got as large as it could, a giant shadow behind it swung something down and sliced its face off. The face was stuck to the window, and he said it started to laugh quietly as it slid down. Mike, still pissed off, and though he wouldn't admit it, beginning to get freaked out, started to argue with him again. We eventually started to follow the creek for a way to cross. We then started to see toys floating in the creek. Really old toys. Old Barbie dolls and baby dolls. This wasn't like any old trash floating in the creek, though. This was a lot of Barbies. A lot of baby dolls. One washed towards the side and Mike picked it up. It had some kind of voice chip that was dying and starting to say some gurgling words we couldn't understand, followed by its sad excuse for laughter. Then it sounded like it was whispering. We thought the batteries must be dying. He just threw it down. We kept going and the sun was starting to set. Alex was freaking out more now and was whimpering and breathing heavily. We all started to see shadows move behind trees, something we all called BS on until we all were seeing it. It was barely light out, and we stop as we see the cabin right in front of us. None of us knows what to think. Mike says, "This is bullshit. I'm going in there." Alex tries to stop him. We all do. All of us just wanted to go home. Mike says to all of us to fuck off. Do our own thing. He doesn't care anymore. This is all bullshit. We started to hear hundreds of the same sort of baby doll noises as before, laughing, whispering, and trying to sing. We start to move forward past the cabin, all of us, and kept pushing forward. We smelled something dead in the air, something stale, the same something as before. We started to hear something crying and something screaming. We just kept going on. We eventually crossed the creek and left the woods. We all get back to our vehicle and got in. It's pitch black and we drive. We're about to get on 45 to Houston, but the road is under construction and can't be accessed. It points to a detour. As we head towards the detour, it seems to be a small, bumpy, dirt road going into the woods. Then we see a young girl come up to us. She looks as though she's in trouble, young and pretty. She approaches the passenger side door and she looks like she's really drugged up or beaten up. Alex doesn't roll the windows down, nor does he open the door. She reaches for the handle, and he immediately locks it. She puts her face on the window and starts to smile really big. We floor it. Alex starts to cry and scream, and we're all breathing really heavily. We finally cut onto a street that takes us up to 45, and we take it the whole way. When we get back to my apartment, everyone doesn't know what to say, and we all break apart and go our separate ways. Mike messages me later and says he's going to go back. I try to convince him not to, and all he does is say it was our own minds and they were screwing with us. I think he just wanted to prove to himself that he wasn't scared. I can smell that stench everywhere now. I don't go out anymore. I just stay in and don't answer the door. Last week, everyone I met was acting really strange. People that I have known for a long time and total strangers. My own dad, when I went over to his place to eat supper, he just watched me strangely while I was sitting down. He didn't say a word the whole time. I kept asking him, what's wrong? He just slowly shook his head. When I was leaving to go home, I turned to wave. He had black eyes and an open mouth like he was in pain. When I started to walk back, he shut the door and bolted it. I stayed there knocking and knocking. Nothing. I called him. His phone was disconnected. I even called the police. Halfway through the questions they were asking me, the connection started to fade into static. I could hear a faint mumbling, singing, and laughing. Mike has completely vanished. There's not even a record of him being alive. And when I call Alex's house, they talk to me like I'm some salesman. They say they don't know any Alex, and please stop calling. The person who tells me that's Alex's mother. I can't get a hold of John either. Someone knocked on my door, and when I went to look, I saw a face completely covering the peephole and a giant smile starting to form. I called the cops again, and instead of turning into static, they got really strange. Sir, are you affected by any drugs at the moment? No. Are you coming home anytime soon? Excuse me? Come home. And the phone call ended. My mail slot swings every now and then. Someone is sliding pieces of baby dolls through it. I try to call people now, and all I hear is static and bad baby doll noises and this crying and screaming. My TV is busted, but when I go to take a piss, I can hear it on. I might be going insane. Whoever lives above me now started to scream in pain and crying deeply recently. I hear giant footsteps from their apartment. I hear bangs and something falling to the ground. From the neighbors to the right of my apartment, I hear what sounds like a baby that never gets tended to, and it sounds like a baby doll whose batteries are dying. My phone has been ringing now, and it's Alex telling me that things in a language that I've never heard before nor could never manage to repeat. I keep getting emails of pictures of black and small colorations. Now I can't even access my email. Someone knocks on the door, and they slam against it. I hear the bolts unlocking one by one, and I run to make sure to lock all of them back. Then I sit down and begin to cry.
That's not bad. I enjoyed that one.
I spent many a hour looking for some creepy pastas, and that was one of the better ones that I'd found.
Yeah, there's a lot of them. I haven't heard that one. I like that. I've heard about the smiling man. I never heard about the smiling girl. But that's, to me, it's either if they're children or elderly. The ghosts seem like our apparition, whatever you call it. When you see them, they seem scarier than like somebody that's about your age.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's just, I don't know. There's something about little kid ghosts. I don't know. You'd lose it anyway, I think, but that was pretty good. I like that one. So I'll do a Holder story and I'm going to go Holder of Vulcan.
Explain to me the Holder stories. I mean, there's how many of these stories are, there's a ton of these, right?
Oh, there's so many, because there's supposed to be what's left, but then I actually found some of the 2,000 that have been lost that you can actually find, but there's 538 of these stories.
Wow.
That you can go through. But this is the Holder of All-Consuming Despair. So all these are like trials. There's things you got to do, and if you don't do them exactly right, you're fucked. If you do them exactly right and they don't like you, you're fucked.
You're fucked.
So sometimes the best, you know. as the stories go. But you go to any abandoned building in any city in the state of California. Anyone will do, it matters not. Venture into the building and find the darkest corner of the darkest room. Stand in that corner and say out loud, I want to speak with the one who has long since run out of tears to shed. Then turn and try to leave through the door you came into. The door will not lead back the way you came, but instead into a small room. In the corner there is a stereo that plays your favorite music, a TV that plays your favorite movie, a table covered in your favorite food and drink, and a couch with a boy no older than 16 on it. The boy will greet you with a sorrowful smile and a polite hello before lowering his gaze to the whiskey bottle in his hand in obvious sorrow. He will not react to you in any other way and will remain in this distressed state despite the good food, television, and music surrounding him. He will only respond to one question. What is it that despairs you so? And he will tell you just what it is that despairs him. Every last tragic moment of his sorrow-filled life will be laid before you. You must sit through this horrible tale of depression and sadness. Most are unable, most flee from the room in tears, others despair of ever being happy again and sit next to him on the couch as oblivious to the joyful things around him as he is, never leaving the room. If he can stand this tale of unending sadness, then he will fall silent at its end. He will return his gaze to the bottle of whiskey and gesture for you to leave. Do not leave, but instead tell him of something you love. It can be anything. A funny story, a heartwarming poem, anything that brought you joy. If you have the heart to think of something joyful after hearing such a tragic tale of despair, then you will be rewarded with a smile on his face of the holder. You must then say, things aren't so bad in the end. At this, he will wordlessly stand up, and as a reward for granting him a few small moments in which he did not wish for his death, he will give you the bottle of whiskey in his hand. Be warned. The few that have emerged from this room have described doing only the above and nothing else. Something to keep in mind. The bottle is object 230 of 538, and its contents will grant you temporary shelter from the despair to come.
I didn't know Robert Smith from The Cure lived in LA. That's pretty good.
Yeah, I like that one. It's not too bad. I there's something about these that... I don't know what it's, I think it's more like the journey or something that you got to go through to, you know, to get the things unlocked that make them seem kind of cool. You got to find most of the places are, mental institutions or halfway houses.
Okay.
So I found a few that were, you know, from different places. So
I'll try. That's good. One.
I'll do the holder of apathy. In any city, in any country, go to the nearest church that you can find. An old or abandoned one is the best, but any church will do. If you must absolutely go to a church that is in current use, be sure to go on a day there are no services. Random strangers can mess this up for you. When you get to the church of your choice, walk towards the door and stop exactly 8 feet from it, with your arms crossed and a scowl on your face. As loud as you can, or as soft as you can manage, repeat the words, I don't want to feel anymore. The door should open for you. If not, then you should bolt for your car or run back the way you came. Don't stop until your legs tire out or you're home. If you do stop, you won't die. Your fate will be no longer enjoyable. You will never see color again. You will never hear music the same way. Your world will become quiet and literally gray in your eyes. You'll be a shell of a person with tears welling but no actual release of emotion. You will feel, but you won't be able to show it. But, so that sounds great. So, but if the doors do open for you, you are welcome. The inside of the church should look burnt out, despite of how unscathed the building looks on the outside. Walk in and sit down on the closest pew that you can find. Wait for about 7 minutes, and a bright, almost blinding light will shine through the first broken stained glass window. And then a random door will open. It could be the front door or a bathroom door, but a door will open, and a very tall, very skinned preacher in tattered robes will walk in and sit next to you. Okay.
That's what kind of preacher?
Very gray-skinned preacher.
A gray-skinned preacher. Okay.
Yeah, okay. You are not to look into his eyes. I don't know how you stop from doing that, but Keep your sight to the floor or on your feet. If the preacher sees you have no intention on looking at him, after waiting for 3 minutes, he will get up, walk towards the front, and grab an old Bible that sits on the floor next to him. Finally, he will begin to speak. Not words from the book, but what he says is directed at you. Every time you dream, you die. The world fades from a tiny abortion that is in your soul. You lay there in a broken heap on the floor, sobbing and waiting for the mother that you so viciously clawed away from. The blood of your birth will be the blood of your undoing. The world will be ripped from you in the same way that you ripped from the uterus. Pain will be the only thing that you can register as you live from now on. The ripping of your flesh, the only sound you will hear, the faces consuming your sight as you fall asleep one last time. Can you accept this fate? Tough one to swallow.
Wow.
You mustn't show any reaction to this, only to look up at him. Your face has to say the same, or what he described will be the most pleasurable dream that you could reach for in this twisted world that you'll live in. Wait 30 or more seconds before saying in a confident voice, "Yes, I can accept this fate. Make it come faster." He will nod, then exit out the same door that he entered. Then pain. A burning sensation will rip through your stomach, consume your chest, and then spread to the rest of your body. You must endure this without changing your expression or moving in the slightest. Blood will seep out of the new claw marks that are slowly forming on your skin. You'll feel something sharp being forced out of your stomach from inside. Keep that scowl. Don't smile. Don't cry. Don't do anything. Just sit there and take it. After a while, the pain will recede and be replaced with an overwhelming amount of pleasure as the object that has just split out of your stomach slides into your lap all on its own. After a few minutes, shut your eyes and scream, "I want this to go away." The pleasure and the pain will be completely gone. Once you're able to move your arms, grab the object and clean it off with your shirt. Look at it for a second, and the seemingly shapeless black blob in your hand will shift and change into a small key, a silver key with a chipped edge. The edge means this key will no longer unlock anything. Whatever was meant for can never be opened or locked off again. With this object, you can control and alter the emotions of others, make anyone fall for you, or despise you with a single look. Your emotions can also be changed. You will be freed from natural emotional reactions. Free to do whatever you want, without pain, without guilt. Keep this key with you. Don't let anyone else find out about what it is. This key is object 362 of 538. It yearns to be with his brethren again. Once the rest are freed, they will meet.
I got some serious Hellraiser vibes from that one.
Well, that was pretty good.
Yeah.
well, they say, yeah, nothing's ever supposed, they're never supposed to meet again. But it doesn't clearly say, you know, it doesn't clearly say what will happen. It's just bad. Like, if just these objects come together.
It's like you don't cross the streams.
Yeah. But you said crossing the streams was bad.
Very bad.
I'm iffy on the whole good bad thing. Do you want me to do another one, or you got another creepypasta to go into?
So that last creepypasta, Matt, what'd you say about that?
Well, the thing that one was missing, what's missing from that creepypasta, what's missing from most pastas is you got to salt the water before you put the noodles in. Most people know this, some people don't, but you need a teaspoon of salt for 2 gallons of water, or for 2 quarts of water.
Yeah,
you don't. You got to put it in before the noodles go in, or you're just going to have a bad pasta. I don't care what kind of pasta.
You got to boil that shit down.
Yep, you got to put the salt in there.
This is another one that I found, and it actually does not have, I didn't find an author, and I didn't even find a title for this particular.
Really?
Yeah, it was different. And it's kind of a longer one. If you got a beer, go ahead and crack it now. It's going to be all right. Just hang in there. Just bear with me.
I found a Doris beer in the back of my fridge. I'll just have that one real quick. That ought to do it. Just one. I only need the one.
Just the one? Yeah, that's all it takes. Because it's not beer. It's Everclear in a can. All right. Here we go. When I was a child, it was just me and my mother. We lived in a property owned by my grandma, a 3-story old farmhouse right at the fringe of the woods. was far off the road down a long, unlit gravel driveway. It felt very isolated at night, being so distant from any other houses, set in an area that hadn't been inhabited for 30 years before we started living in it. Quite often, I was a fairly rambunctious child, so while my mom went off to work, I would occasionally skip the morning bus to school and stay home alone all day. The big house had a habit of feeling incredibly lonely and sparse, so I spent most of my time playing in the forest expanse out back. Some distance into the woods, far enough that I couldn't hear my mother when she called, there was a toppled pine tree which had crashed into another. An even larger trunk of it on its way down was now frozen there, forming a long arc over the forest floor. I loved to climb up the jagged stump at the base of this fallen tree and then steady myself to a point just above the middle. I was never able to make it all the way to the top because it just got too steep for me to continue any further, and I had a bad habit of freaking out from how high I was. One day I was sitting in my usual spot on the fallen tree, which was a good distance from the ground, just listening to the birds singing and simultaneously feeling the warmth of the sun on my neck, when I heard something strange from underneath that paralyzed me in shock. I was gripped by a sudden strong surge of fear for a moment. The voice had come from directly underneath me. I strained to look down but couldn't see anything from over the ledge. For a long time, I just sat there in absolute silence, and I was at a point where I was almost soon to convince myself that I had imagined hearing a man's voice at all.
I know you can hear me.
His voice was much louder this time, as I yelled something out and he scrambled up the log a bit higher. Trembling nervously, I dug my fingernails into the bark and held tight for dear life. I sat there trying to collect my nerves for God knows how long. Although I couldn't see it, the presence of this thing underneath me was still clear. The bird song was much softer, more cautious this time, and when I listened closely, I swear I could hear the faint echo of human breathing. Gathering all my courage, I vowed to prove to myself that this was all my imagination by leaning over the ledge as far as I could possibly go without slipping right off. Digging hard into the bark behind me, I stretched out along my arms and peered over, getting a full view of the empty forest floor and undergrowth, when suddenly,
"Come down here or I'm come up and grab you."
It was so loud. It was as if I was being screamed at right in my face. I released my grip on the tree in fright and plunged off the platform. I was saved only by grabbing a nearby branch, and for one awful second, my bare leg dangled in the cool air. When I pulled myself up, I ran at full speed to the top of the collapsed pine, to the point I'd never reached before. I sat there just below the rustling canopy, pissing myself and staring at the distant base where the splintering wood rose, fully expecting at any moment to see someone crawling rapidly up the pine towards me. Instead, all I heard was the wind whistling in the leaves above and below me, and occasionally snippets of bird song. It was about 2 hours before my mother got home and found me, after much worried searching, trembling, and crying at the top of a fallen tree. Although this incident spooked both me and my mother, in time I somehow recovered, exhibiting that naive, hard skin of a child, although I never went as far into the forest as I used to, and never again approached that fallen tree. Once when I was 12, I had the chore of taking firewood from the shed out back, just at the edge of the woods, and to bring it back inside the house. It was a tiresome job, and I always chose to do it at dusk when the air was brimming with mosquitoes and a swampy fog that usually coated the lawn. By the time I had made my last round, I would sprint back to the house, spooked. One of my least favorite things about this job was that the shed was full of barn owls. And if you've ever seen a barn owl's face staring at you from a dark corner, you'll know how uncomfortable that shed made me. One of these nights, it got mistier than it ever had before. A thick silver fog covered everything and limited my line of sight to a short sphere around. Even though the shed wasn't far from the house, I found myself feeling disoriented, and more than once I walked into the wrong direction. Both times, for some reason, walking straight into the woods. By the time I had reached my last load, it was too foggy to see the street. My eyes stung with moisture and it made my vision blur. Lurching forward, I managed to walk headfirst into a tree, doubling over and dropping all of the wood I was bundling onto my feet with a hard crunch. As I went to pick them up, with my foot throbbing pretty hard, I realized that the ground was too misty for me to see my own knees. I decided to head to the house since we had more than enough wood for one night. However, it was getting to be pretty dark and I couldn't make out any signifiers of which direction I was heading in. Even though I was cautiously walked several feet in all directions trying to figure out my position in the mist, I couldn't figure out any point of identification. I got a cough. Sorry about that. Anyway, I couldn't even locate the fence or the gate. And the more I walked, the more I seemed to stumble into trees, pine needles, and mud crunching under my feet instead of a dew-covered lawn. After a while, I finally realized that I couldn't even find the shed anymore. Cursing myself for being so dumb while trying to ignore my thumping heart and sense that something else was at play, I became aware that I was lost somewhere in the fringe of the forest. Screaming out for my mother at the loudest possible volume was only met with a resounding silence from the depths of the mist all around me from where I stood, affirming that I had wandered too far from the house to be heard. As a deep panic started to settle on me, I noticed a glimpse of something pink moving against a nearby pine tree. Coming closer, I saw that it was a ripped out square of pink paper. On it, there was an arrow pointing left. Looks vaguely like something my mom would make, I rationalized, to keep me from getting lost. So foolishly, I followed the direction set by that green arrow shivering in the intense cold. I kept wandering for about 5 to 10 minutes before needing to stop to catch my breath. My heart was pounding so fast it was beginning to hurt. As I was sitting down, however, I spied what appeared to be another note floating on a nearby trunk. I noticed that this one was embedded with a long nail. It bore another arrow, this one pointing up, and a small, sloppily written note that said, "This way." Despite my increasing panic, I convinced myself that these notes were my only shot at getting back before nightfall. I was so desperate to get the hell out of it, and my brow was cold with sweat, so I followed the green arrow to a point where I could just dimly make out another spot of a pink note up an incline of collapsed stumps and leaf filler. At this point, it was getting pretty dark, and I had to strain both my eyes just to see a few meters in front of me. Following the green arrows, feeling less sure of where I was, I stumbled through the woods, groping out in the mist to feel out for trees. Although I was terrified of something unseen grabbing my arm, I came across the third green note, which had another arrow pointing up again, this one leading to an increasingly steep slope that I didn't recognize being anywhere near my house, and with a poorly drawn smiley face right above it. At this stage, I became too freaked to cope and started to cry just a little. As I slumped against the pine stump, the possibility that I would be out in these woods all night was beginning to sink in, like a syringe being driven into the veins within my arm. I caught a glimpse of another pink square in the near distance. Squinting hard, unnerved by these notes, all of which looked fresh and without sign of decay despite the previous week's nonstop rain, I read it from afar. What I read made my blood turn cold. I stood to my knees, deadly silent, wobbling on them in fear. My ears were sensitive to any tiny prickle of noise in the mist. For a long time, I stood there in this rolling fog, reading and rereading that horrible note over and over and over again, before a snapping stick somewhere behind me caused me to sprint blindly, twigs snagging at my ankles and cut up my face as I ran. Written on the note in big green letters was my name. It felt like I was running for hours, all the while the rain and mist lapped at my back on my neck like the decaying breath of someone running right behind me. Somehow I made it back to the house. All the lights were out and I struggled to find the keys for a moment. When I found them, I bolted inside and quickly crawled into my bed where I remained, unsleeping until morning. Mom just thought I'd come inside and gone to bed and hadn't thought to leave the lights on. It was a miracle, aka some freakish coincidence, that I even found the house at all. The final incident at that damn house was witnessed only by my mother. Up until then, she had never experienced any of the strange things I had, although we mutually shared the peculiar, oppressive quality that the house's interior had on us and its placement in this dreary, imposing woods. Although I was obviously never a popular kid by living way out in the country in the opposite direction from everyone else at the school, I did make some tight friends in my first year of high school. One of these friends, Amanda was her name, invited me over one night and I accepted. My mother drove me out to the place which was about 3 miles away and then drove back home again. The night went well. We watched a horror movie, suitably, devoured some pizza and probably smoked a little pot. My mother went home alone where she intended to get some writing done. She worked for a magazine at that point, and it was about midnight when I received an off-putting text from my mom in all caps. "Is this a prank? I need to know immediately." Thinking it was some kind of joke, I texted her back, "Calm yourself. Is what a prank?" Almost immediately, the response, "Are you at the house?" Of course I responded, "No." Though I was thoroughly weirded out, I didn't receive another message until around 3 a.m. This is when she told me to go to my grandmother's in the morning and to not, by any means, dare go home. I remember those bleak torrents of rain the day I went to my grandmother's and how terribly soaked I was when I finally got there. It was nearly two towns away. I'd had to fight the temptation to go home and drop off my bags, but Mom's disturbing messages from the last night were enough of a warning not to do so. When I arrived, Mom and Grandma were having lunch. At first, my mother seemed to be in some sort of composed state, but when I got a better look at her, I noticed that all the color had drained from her face and she was slightly trembling. At one point, she even sent a small glass crashing to the floor after flinching at the cat brushing around her ankles. It wasn't until later that night when my grandma was sound asleep that she had told me what had happened. Got a cough again. Sorry about that. She went further. Need another little drink there, Matt. All right. It wasn't until later that night when my grandmother was sound asleep that she told me what had happened. She went further as to forbid me from telling my old grandma, but out of fear that would horrify her superstitious soul too much. This is what happened the night when I was at Amanda's, as she described in lurid detail. My mother was sitting on the first story in the living room, where she sat on a couch by the fire, curtains open to the view of the sunset on the canopy, going over her latest draft. At first, it was so faint that she barely noticed it, but after a while, my mother became aware of a vaguely irritated by tiny thumping noises near her head at the window. When she went over to investigate, she saw fat brown moths of a kind we often get at a place buzzing madly into the glass. Reasoning that this was the cause of the sound, she returned to work. However, feeling rattled in some way, it was when the noises started to get sharper and louder that she paid more attention and saw the rocks. There were rocks being thrown at the window from the total blackness of the forest edge. She saw them appear from the shadows of the bush and then fall in an arc and bounce off the window. Looking carefully, she could see small cracks from where heavy ones had hit, right beside where her head had been moments before. Temporarily captivated, she tried to peer into the darkness enough to make out where the rocks were being thrown from. Then, with a startled shock, she jumped back from the window as she saw me standing half behind a tree right near the window, grinning wide and staring at her. My one visible eye stretched wide open, showing all the white. She barely stifled a scream, seeing her own daughter standing there, just staring and smiling. Not only did the figure not move nor blink, it was standing by one of the nearest pines, far from where the rocks were shooting out from the bush. As they continued to do so in a loud downpour, my face unceasingly continued to press out at her, smiling. Thinking this was all some sort of sick prank, hence the later text, my mother shouted my name at the top of her lungs, frightened to the core. However, instead of responding, the mouth of the thing that looked like me behind the tree just started moving as if it was mouthing silent words really, really fast. Suddenly, it turned its head to the side and seemed to be talking to someone else behind the tree, my mom said, who couldn't be seen. But she could see a formless black shape hanging against the other side of the tree. The girl that looked like me kept staring at my mother and doing the silent speed talking thing, then turning and whispering to the thing next to her. Then she would turn back and start up again. Then, breaking the monotonous spell, she suddenly pointed straight at my mother and started laughing.
My mother screamed and fled to her bedroom on the second story, the only room with a working lock, where she shut herself in and sat at the far end of the bed as the rocks began to pitter-patter against the window downstairs, dry heaving and weeping in fear. In my room, my mother said she did not feel safe. There was an awful smell and a weird humming noise in the walls, as she described. She tried to pray for a time before giving up and just listening to the rocks pelt the walls and the windows. Somewhere in the kitchen, she caught the distant, vibrant sound of a window actually smashing, and the weird, continuous humming. Listening more carefully, she could identify it as the softest hint of a mumbling voice.
Probably like mine.
An absolute horror. She recognized the voice, and then, virtually too afraid to look, she tilted her head up to the closet door where an awful white face could be seen staring right at her, mouth contorting and gaping in what sounded like highly sped up whispering. The closet door was only a meter from my mother. It started to open slowly. In an unimaginable explosion of terror, she immediately bolted the door, only to fumble with the lock as bigger and bigger rocks came crashing through the window, which burst apart in a spray of glass shards before finally getting out, running out of the house, completely keeping her eyes off the woods, getting into her car, and driving off. She said that she glanced back right at the end of the prolonged drive. She saw two unmistakable human forms standing at my broken bedroom window, watching as her car got further and further away from the house. This would be their final farewell, as my mother never stepped foot into the place again. As my mother told the story, she broke down in tears. I didn't doubt her, and I still don't. I honestly and fully believe that she experienced what she said she did. It was also quite clear that we were done living in that house for once and for all.
Yeah.
I only went back once with my dad, who I very rarely see now. He came from another state to help us move. Mom had already found a place in town, and we moved in. My dad and I just loaded up his truck with all of that was left inside there. It was a silent, sunny morning when we moved all the stuff and emptied the place. I could wish I could say there was some closure, some final spooking to cap it all off, but there wasn't. It was just a relief to be out of there. There are, however, only two things left worth mentioning. When we checked the house for any signs of intruders, we found that the several windows, including one in my bedroom and the kitchen, had been smashed and rocks were laying on the floor. The second, my dad went out into the trees for a bit to take a leak, and when he came back, he asked how long we'd had the swing set for. Needless to say, we'd never had a swing set, so I was fairly unsettled to discover that in the week since we'd been gone, someone had assembled a rope swing set from one of the highest branches of the old pine tree over the ridge, against which the fallen lock I'd stopped climbing many years ago.
Fairies.
It was obviously new rope and had a nicely polished, sanded down wooden seat at the base. Dad, wanting to keep my mind from recent events, said that a neighbor probably set it up, not realizing it was on our property. Of course, he knew as well as I did that we literally had no neighbors for at least a mile in any direction. There was no house in all that space, and never in my time living there did I ever see other signs of human habitation. But I let it all go and was pleased enough just to say good riddance to that horrible place as we drove off for good. For the most part, I've found it best to try and forget what happened at that place. Sometimes I just can't help but ponder it, though. It's been long enough now that I no longer feel scared talking about it. But for a long time, I couldn't. Seeing as it's around Halloween, what better time to share? My grandmother recently sold the house to a new family, that being a young couple and their little son, shortly after we moved out, despite my mother's desperate insistence that it be left empty. Now she refuses to talk about what happened altogether. I'm less anxious about it, although sometimes I can't help but let my imagination get the better of me. All I can do is think of that old house, the fallen tree, the new occupants, and the swing out back, gently swinging in the breeze as that little boy toddles over, obviously towards it.
That reminds me, there was that children's book when I was a kid, Goblin in the Tree. I think it was Goblin in the Tree or something. But the problem with that pasta is that you have to cook the sauce slow, and you have to let the meat flavor it. And you have to...
It needs more oregano.
You have to stir it so it don't stick to the bottom of the pan. Now, if the tomato sauce starts to stick to the bottom of your pan, you don't have to waste it, but you do have to pour it into a different pan and let that go. Because if you stir it up, you're going to ruin your shit. See?
Yeah.
If you're doing a Sunday sauce, it's gonna take well,
I wanted to find a couple that I had hadn't heard on YouTube or in podcasts, or you know, I don't actively go out and try to make it the pasta.
But I did have to write down, so people probably heard it through my microphone. I had to write down the rocks thing because it was like, I was like a year and a half ago or something. I was in my work truck and I was driving, and it was right next to like this field that had just been, you know, they had just taken all the corn out of it or whatever. And right. I was doing about, I don't know, 10 miles an hour just leaving from a stop, and this dirt clod just hit my windshield. I stopped, threw it in reverse and just shined my lights, and I got these big old LCD lights on top, shined it out. There was nothing out there. It was just a dirt clod. Just, I was like, I don't know how that happened, but I was like, that was pretty crazy. So I don't know. It smashed right on the windshield, just hit and shattered and fell because it was dry.
Ghost Cat and Herrick Road, huh?
I was by Dietrich.
Oh, but, okay.
Yeah. So I was like,
that's creepy.
I was like, fucking bastards. I was like, some pricks around, you know, being dicks. But I backed up and shined. And there wasn't much of a ditch. I mean, it wasn't a deep one anyway. I mean, I could have seen if they were there. I mean, they'd have been super fast. Because I was barely moving. So as soon as the rocks thing hit, that popped back up in my head. Because it had been a while since I thought about that.
Creepy shit, man.
Do you want me to do another holder story?
Fuck yeah, bro.
Well, I'll do the holder of damnation.
Damnation. Next time, Gadget. I'll get you next time, holder.
In any city, in any country, go to any mental institution or halfway house you can get yourself into. When you reach the front desk, ask with no hesitation to visit someone who calls himself the holder of damnation. The clerk will frightfully deny any knowledge of such a thing, but will conveniently slip you a toothless key with a double cross engraved upon it and point you down a hallway. At the end of this hallway is a perfectly nondescript door, but for the doorknob, it is made of a stone that is blacker than the deadest night. And should you touch it, you will feel as your very soul is being drained away. Upon entering the door, you will be in a brightly lit hallway. The walls are lined with drawings drawn in the style of a child, depicting the dreams of such a child. Do not look at these pictures, for their pleasant appearance is merely a facade, hiding their true nature. Should you gaze upon them, it will surely be the last thing you ever see, for your eyes will be the first to go. The ceiling of the hallway drips blood. That's fun. If you were to look up, and believe me, this is something you do not want to do.
Something you do not want to do.
You will see the disemboweled corpses of hundreds, nay, thousands of children impaled to the ceiling.
I feel like we need a Tamariah, like, scream at you, like,
yeah! I was like a Cannibal Corpse album cover.
Yeah.
Should you reach the end of the hallway, you will find a massive iron door at eye level. There will be a small sliding plate. Take the key that was given to you earlier and hold the toothless part in your hand with a double cross, uncovered and pointing directly at the plate. Close your eyes and give one sharp knock on the plate. You will hear it slide back. Resist any temptation to look, for it will be the end of you. Wait 10 seconds, run as fast as you can, and only stop when your legs can go no further. If you feel the key change, however, wait until you hear the plate slide back into place and open your eyes. In its place will be a massive padlock. Unlock it with your newly changed key and quickly enter the room, closing the door behind you. The holder of damnation despises the light. You will be in a dark room where there's no light whatsoever. But you will hear labored breathing from the farthest corner. Do not move closer and do not speak. The only words that will not result in your death are, "Who was the first to bring them together?" Should you ask, you will hear a voice, neither male nor female, speaking in your mind. Soon, it will give up on speech, and the images it creates in your mind will be horrifying. Do not scream, whatever you do, for it will see this as a sign of weakness and in your existence in such a way that only criminally insane could understand.
If you weather this tale, you will notice that specks of light have appeared all throughout the room. A hiss will fill the room and arise the most horrific scream you have ever heard. Shit.
I'm glad I'm not the only one.
Rise of the most horrific scream you have ever heard will reach the point of light explodes, lighting up the room. When the light dims, you will see the charred remains of the holder in the corner. Do not move in for a closer look. Dead snakes can still bite. At your feet, you will find a small bag. It contains a flawless crystal star. The object is 63 of 538. And it's allowed to shine. Its light will drive all that see it mad.
So well, yeah, that's fucking metal.
Yeah, that one's pretty. Well, I mumbled over the fucking part there. Like I said, my mind gets in front of my eyes, and then I started reading in front of it. I was like, "Well, that part's cool." And then I was,
"Shit, it's got too metal for Matt."
It did. But the thing about these is like them. I've done a few where they came from different places, but most of them from mental institutions or halfway houses. So I got it. What I was thinking, like after reading through a bunch of these, I was sitting back thinking, I was like, I hope that somewhere in a mental institution or halfway house, there is a person that works the reception desk that has memorized a shitload of these and is just waiting. Waiting for somebody to come in so they can do it.
Yeah.
How many people have went out and tried these and people are just like, security, can we get this fucker out of here? But yeah, if one person actually started doing the stuff.
Oh, hey, Luke, I need you to come down here. We got another fucking wild one over here.
Constantly coming in. No, man. That just went through my head the other day after I'd been reading these. I was like, oh, that one's cool. That one's cool. And then I got to thinking, I was like, man, if I worked the reception desk, I'd memorize this shit. I would have so much of these so that as soon as they came in and said whatever the holder was, I would do exactly what they said and just like point down the hall. And when they start walking, just start laughing. I wonder how long he's going to stand in that room before he realized I was bullshitting. Make it to a room.
Right. Well, Matt, I think I'm going to open the door to the refrigerator. Any refrigerator will do. Do you want to reach in? grab a cold beer.
Town, in any city.
Then I'll reach into the door.
Walking into any liquor store. that will allow you in. Be kind to the clerk. Go grab your preferred beverage. Walk up to the clerk. Politely ask him how their day is going. Pay for your drink. Should you not do this, you will be arrested. So just go ahead and pay for it. Then leave. Go home and turn on this podcast and enjoy.
Sound like that, yeah.
Well, that's a lot lighter than the last one we did. I gotta say that. Yeah,
it's really chill. I needed this one. Thank you for agreeing to get weird and wacky for a minute.
And if we ever want to go back, I've got so many more of these little holder things to do that we could fucking go back over.
Hold the door. We should definitely.
When the lightning. Hodor.
Hodor. Well, guys, thanks for hanging out with us. Once again, I'm Zach.
I'm Spar.
And we'll see you next time right here on Well Hello, Mr. Fancy Pants.
Later.
It's evil! Don't watch it! It's alive! I want you.
They're coming to get you.
This is
me.
Hello, Mr. Fancy.